Well,
our liaison.
He's gonna be calling in. He did.
Director Stovall is on the phone.
He was not able to join us.
All right.
He is traveling.
Hello, Director.
I think I heard that. Thank you for joining us.
He's getting on Zoom. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Well, at 3:32, I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Welcome, if you're with us, to the July 27th regular meeting of the Georgetown Divide Public Utility District Finance Committee. Glad you could make it. And to begin with, where am I? Get nervous, my first time with the gavel in the hand.
You're doing good.
Let's begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I'll power behind that gavel.
Our general manager would lead us in the pledge this.
Oh, I'd love to. Please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Moving on to item number two is the adoption of the agenda. Are there any committee member comments on the agenda before we hear a motion?
If there is, if you mind, I interject just for one moment for the public's sake. I would just like to offer apologies to those in the public here, both present and online. We did have a bit of an issue getting a packet together, and it was because we wanted to include the draft of the audit that we received on Monday. So we scrambled as hard and as fast as we could to get a packet together. And so that is why maybe people are going to say it came in late. It did come in late. The packet did get posted online with multiple email notifications. But the unfortunate nature of what we were trying to do here is we just could not get it out in time. And so I wanted to make sure that the committee is aware that there may be a comment or two from the public about the lateness of the packet. And I'll apologize to the committee for the lateness of not being able to review the full packet because of how late we were getting it to you guys.
Okay. Did the packet include the draft audit that we'll be discussing as an action item?
Yes.
So that is, so that's available online then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, very good. Would anyone care to make a motion on today's agenda?
I'll move to adopt the agenda from the June 29th meeting.
That'll be the next one. That's the adoption.
Oh, this is today's agenda. I'll move to adopt the agenda for this meeting of July 27th.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Moving on to number three. This is the public forum, so any member of the public may address the Finance Committee on any matter within the jurisdictional authority of the Finance Committee. Public members desiring to provide comments must be recognized by the committee chairman and speak from the podium or from Zoom if you're remote. Comments must be directed to the Finance Committee Chairman. Finance Committee will hear communications on matters not on the agenda, but no action will be taken. So if we already have an item for it later on, we'll take comments on those as they come up. No disruptive conduct shall be permitted. At any Finance Committee meeting, persistence in disruptive conduct should be grounds for summary termination by the chairman of that person's privilege of address. So far, so good. We never even had to approach that. So does anybody have any public comments? Yes, sir.
Yeah, Steve Dowd. Yeah, as we know, fire dangers coming upon us here. You know, we don't know if we're going to have a fire or not, but we want to be prepared. And I am kind of concerned about how much diesel, propane, whatever, to run our generators in case they shut the power off on us. I know they didn't do it last year. We got evacuated, but the power stayed on. But anything can happen. And if we get shut off, how long can we run without electricity from PG&E?
Are you talking about our infrastructure here? Yeah. I believe we can go 6 days, five or six days, I think is what it is here. And that is on the propane that we have here locally. So we would be able to come back in and keep that refilled. So it is definitely something that we're looking at as part of an emergency plan.
So is Walton and Sweetwater, are they on propane too?
Yes, they are.
Okay, yes. We need to make sure we're filled.
Yes.
Okay, it's just concerned.
Yeah, we actually just had service done on all of the generators as well. So that was something that we took concern with as well.
Thank you. What the heck?
Anyone present here have any?
Is that one of our guys?
Not technically.
Is that the?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. You got some ambiance music outside playing.
Sorry about that.
Hey, being on Main Street, we put up with this all the time. I mean, these guys go back and forth with these boom boxes. It's just been just a whole lot of chips. Crazy.
Anyone on Zoom have any comments? If you do, you can raise your hand on Zoom. Give you a few more seconds here.
Nobody I'm seeing.
Seeing no comments on Zoom. Move on to item number four, approval of minutes from the meeting of June 29th. Any discussion on those minutes before we hear entertain the motion?
And I will just offer that Secretary Helleck did give it a once-over. And unfortunately, she sent notice that she's not in attendance today to give her approval. But I did get an email approval from Liz and she did provide an email approval from Liz and myself that the minutes were reviewed by her.
Excellent. Do I hear a motion? Anyone online? Anything on the minutes? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes of June 29th are approved. Move on to item number five, informational items. I'll turn it over to our.
Oh,
you gotta be quick. All right, we'll get you. What would you like to say about the minute?
Well, they're extremely long. I'm not sure why the minutes include practically every word verbatim from the tape. And generally, you know, minutes are a bit truncated. And somehow I managed to sound like English is my second language, first language or something. And I kind of resent being called a nefarious stranger who might change your words. Nefarious is a new word to me.
You were quoted as being a nefarious stranger in the minutes. I missed that. Hold on. I see.
We are going to verify that. So.
So that was.
And then in any of the comments I made, instead of them sounding at least somewhat literate. I couldn't really sound that bad in person.
Okay.
But I would expect the minutes not to include every single word forever, never, never. There's like six pages.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So I will read for the record the portion of the minutes that Ms. Neely is questioning. It says, Ms. Neely shared that the bottom of the general manager's email said it's confidential and one must have permission to share. The general manager shared that it is trying to avoid the potential for nefarious people to change his language. This is to cover the district legally. So at no point did we call anybody in the public nefarious. We were referring to those people who may take an email and change the words for it.
Okay.
For the record.
That comment and response will be reflected. We've already taken action on the minutes, so we'll go ahead and move on. Informational items. Item 5A on our agenda. Then I will let you go ahead and take A, B, C, D, and just in rolling sequence.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for that. So for item 5A, we have some potentially big news for the district. I have a couple. I'm not going to. Where is the rest of the list? Hang on. So we have a grant spreadsheet I usually have prepared for the committee, and I apologize that I didn't include that. My big news is it is like I am 95% sure that we were awarded $1.2 million from CAL FIRE to our grant called Fire Safe on the Divide. This would reduce wildfire fuels for 230 acres in the communities of Cool, Greenwood, Georgetown, and Garden Valley. Includes the purchase of mastication equipment for maintenance and continued fuel treatment capacity in the Georgetown Utility District service area. For this project, vegetation treatment is planned at 11 sites, including water distribution infrastructure directly adjacent to homes and evacuation routes, There are 440 parcels with habitable structures within 1/4 mile of the treatment areas, and the district provides water to approximately 10,000 customers in the region. By treating the vegetation at those sites, the communities will gain both protection of their water supply for firefighting and reduction of severe wildfire risks to homes and lives. This is a big one. This is one we've asked for in the past, and we've been denied, and it looks like we're going to be getting this $1.2 million. And what it'll give us is the ability to purchase a new excavator, a new mastication head for that excavator, a skid steer with also a mastication head so that we can continue to clear these areas. Now, that's only a portion of the money. Approximately $700,000 to $800,000 of this money will go into a contractor, I'm just going to use Mountain Enterprises because everybody knows them, a contractor similar to Mountain Enterprises who will come up here and do a clearing of all of these areas and do a fire safe clearing so that when we come back in as a district, we can continue to keep those areas clear. So this is a huge addressing comment from the public, also addressing issues that we have at some of our infrastructure to keep our infrastructure safe, but also just to keep the general community safe as well.
Nichols, are you saying that after they do the initial work for defensible space, then the district would maintain that after the fact?
Yes, sir.
That's a big problem around here. They'll come in and do a whiz-bang job, and then 5 to 10 years later, you have back to where it was, except it's a little more brushy and a little more fire hazardy.
Yeah, so that's why the grant is an initial clearing,
yeah,
plus the equipment that so that we can do the work. So this equipment can be used by twofold. We could use it for regular work here at the district, but it also can be used to keep these areas clear. And that is the ultimate goal of this. And so really, we're going to get some nice equipment, some bigger excavators, a nice skid steer that the employees can use. And this was kind of something I came in when I first started here and was a wish list for me from the employees here of something that they really needed and wanted. And so we got them a brand new small excavator because of surplus funds. And now we can get them the big one that they really need to keep these areas clear.
Would you consider a dump truck to go along with all that to pull those around?
So that is something that we have in the CIP budget to purchase. And that was something that was approved by the board already. So we're working on getting we're not going to buy anything used. We're going to buy something. We're going to buy anything new. We're going to buy something used that we're trying to try to find something for that. So it'll be a 10-wheel dump truck that we can pull those around.
But this won't be on the 1.2 grant.
I don't believe so. I have to. I'm waiting for final approval from Cal Fire, and so they'll send us a letter and they'll send us a whole. But we may be able to roll it in there. Who knows?
Yeah.
It would be nice if we could.
Yeah.
And then I will add one more thing. We did receive, the office received a wellness grant in the amount of $1,000. And so these are given out once a year by Aqua JPIA. Basically, this wellness grant allows for the office here to put in something healthy for the employees. And so we've identified the need for a water bottle filling station and an ice maker for the office here. So that's my two grant updates. I believe there might have been a question from the public here.
You talking about buying a new or used excavator?
No, Brent, we're going to buy a new excavator, not used.
Okay. Well, in excess equipment, you sold one, I don't know, 2 months ago?
Not large enough. The one we're buying is going to be 2 to 3 times the size of any of the excavators we've ever had here in the district.
Okay.
Just want to say congratulations. That's a big get.
Yeah,
for, to be able to secure a grant like that. And those prices, in my day job in the jurisdiction to the north of us, I've received a grant about half that size or less than half of the of that productivity. Sounds right. Sounds just about right. The scale that you've received with the amount of work you plan to accomplish. And just again, congratulations for securing that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
If I can roll on, unless there's any questions from the public, I can go to 5B. I do have an update for the federal appropriation. I have good news and bad news, unfortunately. I'll start with the bad news first. Well, I guess the bad news is kind of the good news. They reduced our allotment from $1.5 million to $1.25 million. However, we are included in the bill from the House. So that's really great news. right now the 1.25 million it's not official, but it's definitely kind of that next step in the process of receiving this funding for a water tank at the Sweetwater Treatment Plant. Ultimately, we originally assessed that we needed a 2 million gallon tank. And as we continue to look at the amount of water there, that may be an excessive amount of water. So we are going to probably dial this back to about a 1 million gallon tank, because the tank we have that's up on the hill at, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the hill that the tank is on. Angel Camp, excuse me. So the Angel Camp tank is only about 500,000 gallons. And so we think if we have a million down on the bottom and we can pump up to that 500,000 as needed, then we can have that extra bit of water for fire, for all the other things that we're trying to do here. And I've gotten some initial estimates and initial quotes, and we should be able to pay for the entire project, plus all the tie-in, plus all the infrastructure that we need to do for this tank with that 1.25 million.
Just in terms of elevation wise, will that tank sit above Georgetown, below Georgetown?
It'll be at the treatment plant. So if you're familiar with the Sweetwater Treatment Plant, as you drive by, there is a gravel area that is right in the middle. It's where the old treatment plant used to sit, and that is where we're going to place that.
Okay. So it will serve treated water only. It doesn't serve raw water.
Okay. Just treated water.
Okay.
So those are two really great news, news items. And then if you want to allow me to go right into 5C, unless we have any other questions. Oh, did you have a question?
No.
So 5C, we have our investment partners on the Zoom. Optimized Investments is David Bilby is on Zoom. And I'll let him give the update, but all of our funds, I believe, are fully invested at this point. I think the only thing we're waiting is one more $100,000 to be transferred into our California Class account, which will amount to $1.5 million. And David, can you, I know you're doing something else, but do you have the current number that that class is giving us? I think it's 5.3.
That's correct, 5.29% as of today.
So that is our short-term operating reserve account. So it's, we're operating that much like our savings account has in the past. And so we're able to transfer in and out of that much like you guys would as a savings account. So it's a very liquid account, in and outs, but we're still generating a high return on our investment. So David, I'll turn it over to you to give an update on what we've done, and please.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. My name is David Bilby. I'm President and CEO of Optimized Investment Partners. Slide number 2 shows the work that we did with the district just over the last couple days. So I don't know. If we can go back to slide 2. Thank you. This screen shows the 25 investments that we purchased yesterday. Slide, there we go. And those investments included federal treasuries, agencies, and notes, federally backed certificates of deposit as well, up to the legal limit of 30% of the portfolio. And we got very favorable pricing yesterday. So this was a part of the long-term and short-term portfolio strategy that we discussed with the board back in February, and we've been working on with the district over the last several weeks. And ultimately, the pricing couldn't have been better. We, interest rates have gone up since the last time we spoke to the board. We really were able to lock in a lot of great long-term yields. So if you go to the next slide, you can see how we distributed those dollars around. So a part of our investment strategy with the district is to make sure that we're invested out over the 5-year time horizon. And this chart does not include the 1.5 million Nicholas mentioned that's in the liquid portfolio. So this is a part of the shorter and longer term portfolio strategy, as well as we have the 1.5 million that's going to be fully liquid. So this is a very nice laddering distribution. This will guarantee over the next 5 years a locked in amount of interest revenue, but then it will also create liquidity in each year as the investment matures. If the district needs to take some money back into its checking account or operating account, we can, or we can reinvest it using the same strategy over a five-year time horizon. But this will guarantee that annual liquidity in addition to the short-term liquidity instruments we have. The third slide shows the interest revenue projection. So on the next slide, we've itemized out every single investment of the 25 and put that into basically a spreadsheet to show you how much money was invested for each time maturity horizon. So we've got each of those dollars on your screen all the way out until August of 2028. So you can see small bits of money invested in each year so that the district never has to worry about a large amount of money. We'll always have money coming in for liquidity purposes. So the $7.6 million on the screen is spread out quarter by quarter over 5 years. And the calculations on the right really are the actual rates that were on the first slide that included the yield to maturity. So on the whole portfolio, not including the liquid portion of the portfolio, the district was able to get 4.59% for that full portfolio. So some of their investments are over 5% in the shorter term, some were just over 4% on the longer term. But what this looks like for the next 12 months is an estimated $440,000 in interest income over the next 12 months. The Federal Reserve did raise rates yesterday. We don't know how that's actually going to affect the other bond yields over the portfolio time horizon over the next year. It could likely improve the returns on class. So we should see class interest rates continuing to go up from that 5.29 today. Hopefully we'll see that go up to 5.5 over the next several weeks. So the 440,000 numbers if interest rates stayed the same, but we've locked in all of the investments on your screen. And we're going to be providing quarterly reporting for the board so that you can see our progress as we move along and any changes to the portfolio and making sure that we're in compliance. That's the exciting news that Nicholas wanted to share with you guys today. I'm here for any questions that you have about what we did over the last couple of days and what we're going to be continuing to do for the district.
Before any questions, I just would like to reiterate something that happened in the budgeting process. You'll notice that number of about $450,000 in a 12-month return. So that's more than we actually budgeted for. So that there is about, I think we budgeted $250,000 in the budget. Yeah. So we're looking at a considerable cushion that we have there with that investment portfolio over and above the revenues that we already anticipated.
There's your dump truck.
Hey now.
It's Peter.
I have a question for David. David, the maximum guarantee for FDIC per institution is at 250.
That's correct, sir.
So we made room for interest, accrued interest, to stay within that $250,000 limit. Correct.
That is absolutely correct. We price them up to the amount of whatever the coupon payments are to be fully guaranteed as the district receives those coupon payments.
And I see the number du jour for the bills, T-bills, are 400,000. Any particular reason why 400?
What our goal was is to use the cash flow model that we developed for the district to spread out the investments, but not make it too administratively burdensome on the district in order to report back what is our goal. So 400,000 was the rough number that we needed to have per quarter to ensure no significant drop off in liquidity. So we were looking to always have that 400,000 set. That's how we modeled the long-term portfolio of 7.6 million total. Is about 1.6 million per year. So we took the each year, divided that up by four. So about 400,000 per quarter outstretched out over that 5 year time horizon. So that's how we got to the 400,000. But then when it came to actually creating the portfolio, we made some decisions that benefited the district by going a little bit higher on some of those CDs that were available so that we could get additional yield at no additional risk. So that's why you see some of the fluctuation on the screen between 400,000 up to almost 500,000 in some quarters and down to 300,000. And the team felt very comfortable. Jessica, Nicholas, and my team felt very comfortable doing that, considering the board was supportive of that 1.5 million in class, in addition to the 400,000 in the operating checking account. So we've got plenty of liquidity to where fluctuations of 100,000 or 200,000 in a quarter isn't going to be a detriment to the district for operations.
Thank you.
Any other, let me turn to the committee first for any comments, and then we'll go to the public. Any questions, comments from the committee?
Well, it's pretty solid to me. I like the fact that they are still in FDIC limits.
Yeah, we also have this all run through what's called a safekeeping account. Mm-hmm. And as far as I understand, David, if you could explain what that safekeeping account does for the district and how that is another additional safeguard.
Yeah, that's a great comment. Thank you, Nicholas. So a safekeeping account is very similar to a trust account or trustee account for bond funds. It's a third-party bank that holds the title to each of the investments and ensures that whatever investments that the district is authorizing are actually purchased for the exact quantities, the exact dollar amounts, and they hold those in trust for the district. So we are one layer of a check and balance. The district, the board is another layer. We have the safekeeping account, which we're using US Bank as a third party trustee for those funds. And then we also had Time Value Investments as our broker dealer in this transaction that confirmed each of the amounts. So we've got four different parties looking out in total for the ratepayers' money.
I have another question. Since the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and other banks, and there's been more failure since the Great Recession 15 years ago, there's only about 1% in reserve in the FDIC insurance fund backing $18 to $20 trillion of investments. Where does a public agency, if the government defaults with only 1% in reserves backing, in other words, a couple hundred billion backing $20 trillion, where does the public agency get in line with regard to the public as far as in the insurance? Is it everyone on an equal playing field as far as reimbursement if there's a failure in these banks? It's not the Treasury.
Yeah, no, that's a great concern and question. I think that's important to address publicly. One important piece of that is you wouldn't see a $20 trillion default because most deposits are not invested like Silicon Valley Bank, where their actual loss was due to investing long-term, but similar to the mid-2000s, you had sort of a run on the bank where banking clients needed their liquidity back. And so that was the reason for Silicon Valley Bank and some of the other banks to actually run into that issue of not having sufficient money to come up with. So to answer your question specifically about FDIC, I'm obviously not a lawyer for the federal government, but they have several tools they can use in the event of depleting the FDIC funds. One of the tools they've used in the past is the Treasury has the ability to issue more debt. So the Treasury does that now. They did it as a part of the recession in the late 2000s. They're trying to wind that back. But essentially, you know, that's one mechanism is issuing debt. They also have the ability to print money. So if the federal government, they would not create a pecking order and say, you get your money and you don't get your money. The banking system would collapse if people's deposits, if the FDIC coverage was not honored by the federal government. And obviously we know that we are still the reserve currency, the US dollar is still the reserve currency, and the ability to print money in order to pay debt obligations is likely and possible if the federal government needed it for FDIC purposes.
You've been following the markets. The Chinese yuan and the Russian ruble are becoming the world standard in the BRICS nations. And you're right, they won't print money, they'll print digital debt. And so at least the treasuries, you're one step closer to the so-called printing press. But thank you for that explanation.
I did have one question before we go to the public. It could be for Nick or David. David, thank you for the presentation. It's very clear. So we were talking, just as you came in, about some of the performance of state funds, for example, PERS maybe underperforming some. And some of those decisions may be because there are policy drivers in that investment strategy that can favor things like, for example, green technology, social priorities that legislatures have and things like that over that can, you know, the trade-off for that is lower interest or less return on investment. For our investment strategy at the district here, is it purely financial priorities or are there any other
priorities? Purely financial. We don't use a social hierarchy within the investment policy.
And I appreciate that. While I think social responsibility is very important, it's kind of a lost cause to try to do that, especially at a level like ours. So I'm glad to hear that you're making good, sound financial strategy decisions for this investment portfolio. We turn to public. Mr. Dowd.
Yeah, Steve Dowd. David, you were mentioning liquid and liquidity multiple times. What does that mean?
So the government code requires that the district maintain a minimum of 6 months of operating capital for purposes of operations. That can come in the form of liquid investments, which means readily convertible to cash. So if you have money in a savings account that can be moved to your checking account or spent, that is liquid. These other funds that we've been talking about, CLASS or LAIF or other JPA pools, these are pools of investments that the district at any time can request their money back and get the money back. So it's convertible to cash or convertible to immediate cash is the form of liquidity. Our longer term investments on your screen, when we're buying a 5-year treasury, yes, the district can sell them, but they're not considered liquid. So they're not readily convertible to cash without subject to market rates of return and interest rates. So when we talk about liquidity, the really under 1-year strategy, the district's going to have over $2 million in readily convertible investments to cash.
That's something you can use right now when you need it.
Correct. If for an emergency or for anything else.
Thank you. I understand now.
I think the difference would be if you have a house that's not liquid, you have to sell a house and then convert it. Whereas if you have a checking account, that's liquid because you can access that money right away. These accounts, this California CLASS account, it operates much like a checking account. We can, if Jessica puts in a transfer or myself puts in a transfer in the morning, we can have the money on the same day. And so that's why it's considered a liquid account.
So if a catastrophe happened, Bonnie, I'll get right to you. If a catastrophe did happen and you had to dig into some of the accounts that were committed to, say, a 3 or a 5-year horizon, would you just sacrifice a portion of the interest or how does that? Or do you make a decision of whether it's worth it to go out and take a loan out elsewhere?
I've been involved in 3 FEMA disasters from 2004 till current. And I can tell you specifically what has happened in the past is the federal government, you have contractors that are going to come in, whether it's fire-related, flood-related, or any other actual declared disaster. They're going to come in and offer support and assistance. Most contractors are going to be net 30 days. If the district were out of pocket, let's say $1 million or $2 million, you're going to get reimbursed an additional administrative allowance. It's not necessarily interest, but you're not going to be out that money for a long period of time, and then you are going to get an administrative allowance. So if there was an emergency, you're probably going to be made close to whole, if not whole.
Thank you. Bonnie.
Question about how much money we actually have invested. Let's say, late for a moment, we got $7 million something.
We don't have any money in late.
It's moved out.
That's what we're talking about
today. If we see it, is it out on paper?
It is out. It is in these new investments, and that's what we're trying to show you is where the money is in all these different bonds and different CDs and treasuries.
Okay, so it's moved into D-Fund's area somewhere, or the money's actually moved out of D-Fund?
What we're trying to say is it's out, it's purchased all of these new things. That's why you have a report, and that's what Mr. Bilby is trying to tell you.
I didn't have a report.
Oh, it's part of the packet.
It's on the podium.
It's right there on the podium here.
Yeah, I'll get it. We got it.
So to reiterate, what we just saw in the presentation is where the money physically resides today. That's not a proposal. That's where the money is.
Very, very correct. I think I should give you more time to see.
And Nicholas wanted us to present this timely, but normally what we're going to be doing is reporting to the board every quarter with an actual quarterly report that the government code requires. And that's going to answer some of the questions the lady in the audience asked about that, because it's going to detail specifically where all the buckets of money are for the district. This was a response to what we did this week in getting all of the investments purchased, but a more comprehensive quarterly report will be coming in October/November for the September 30th quarterly end.
And so just to add, to continue to answer that question, in the safekeeping account, so we're going to, when we say the safekeeping account, that would be referring to CDs, bonds, treasuries, there is $7.5 million. The California class account, which is now our liquid investment account or our operating reserve account, has currently 1.4, and we are transferring another $100,000 that we'll make it 1.5 in that account. We are going to be leaving approximately $450,000 in our savings account. That is to pay the bills. That's basically 1 month's worth of bills. And then we have approximately $20,000 or $26,000 in the LAIF account that is leaving it there and leaving it open. And I'll just, I don't want to have Mr. Bilby come back off. We're leaving the LAIF account open because in the future, as you can see, the Treasury has been changing their interest rates considerably higher, and it is anticipated that at some point it will reduce again. And when it reduces again, the way the LAIF system works, we can transfer that money back out of those investments and back into the LAIF, which at that point may be getting a better return on the investment. Currently, it's getting like 3.25%, which is okay, but it's not as good as the 5.3 we're getting today in class, or the 4.5, almost 5% in the other treasuries. And so that account is still open. It's still accessible. There's just not a lot of money in it right now.
Another question. I have a question, comment, statement, and verification. First, thank you for the FEMA explanation. And secondly, I haven't been keeping track last month or so. Is the yield curve still inverted?
Yes, it is. It's even more inverted as of yesterday, with overnight rates going up to 5.5.
So we're not sacrificing yield for liquidity with the current interest rate environment. I was going to also state, and check me if I'm wrong, if the interest rates were declining, we would get more for those bonds if we cashed them in before maturity, because they'd be worth more. So in that kind of environment, you wouldn't be sacrificing, correct?
That's correct. Absolutely.
Okay. I think that's about it. Thank you. Where's the cash settlement account? Is it for all of these funds? Where does, at maturity, do they go into a settlement account, or is that the LAIF?
They go into the U.S. bank account, and then they are reinvested into new treasuries or new CDs.
Okay, thank you.
I see Cherie's hand up. I'm waiting.
Hello,
Cherie.
Can you hear me?
We can, go ahead.
Okay. Yep. Okay, on the portfolio detail page, like number two, under the description and say like number five under the description. Can you tell me what number two the investment is in? Is that T stand for Treasury?
That T stands for Treasury. So that's a Treasury with a 2.5% coupon payment and a $400,000 par value.
Okay. And then say like item number five, TA Bank, what is that?
That is a certificate of deposit for $200,000 yielding 5.15% that matures in January of 2025.
Okay, so that's invested in that particular bank?
When we talk about banks, yes, but it's under the FDIC limit. So the certificate of deposit is just like your local or regional bank that offers a certificate of deposit. It's identical to that, yes.
So when you do your quarterly report, would we have a better description so we know exactly what the bank's names instead of just maybe, you know, hyphenated? Is that possible or?
So the information, the data is there. The requirement from the government code is to summarize all the types of investments, and we're legally responsible to track the FDIC numbers of these banks to ensure that the district doesn't go over that $250,000 limit by accidentally investing in the same bank twice. These are the acronyms that are used by the trading software itself. The actual request for additional information to spell that out, we can talk to the district about obtaining that information. And normally I can tell you it's not reported in full because some of these banks could be all over the world, or all over the country, I should say. So it could have a very long name, but it's up to the district and whether we want to add additional words to the actual quarterly reports.
Okay, it'd be interesting. All right, thank you.
Billy, can you use the QSIP number to look it up?
You can use the QSIP number and you can use the short description to look up these folks, yes.
Thank you.
So for example, if you were curious, you could Google on the QSIP 912796ZY8, which happens to be number one, and that would tell you something about the that 5.2.
Okay, but where do you...
Is that right?
That's correct. There's a few different websites out there that have QSIP lookup identifiers, and one of them, I think, is through a free brokerage type online system.
Okay, thank you.
I think Yahoo Finance does it.
Yes. Sheree, you have something else?
No.
Very good.
Where do you look that up? Hey, thanks.
Search engine. Yahoo Finance.
I will try to go on the search engine right now to look that up, but I'll get back to you one second.
QSIP stands for customer something something. I mean, you'll know who the bank is,
right.
Or the institution. Yeah.
David, can you explain the rating column? I see AAA, which I know, and then there's NR, which I presume is not rated, and then AAA. And maybe I'm just not looking at the footnote. So a non-rated agency, okay, is an agency that's not rated. So why is there's nothing in between AAA and NR? Can you explain the ratings?
Yeah, I sure will. So if the district decides later on to allow for some additional riskier investments, the government code allows for up to 25 different investment types. We just recommended the district start with the safest products available out there, federally insured, federally backed, and collateralized. When we get into, let's say, commercial paper or corporate notes or bonds, each of those investments is going to have a rating on them. So everything that you're invested in is either federal treasuries, federal agencies, or they're going to be that CDs we talked about, which most of these banks have AAA ratings. What you would see if we were to invest in the future, let's say in commercial paper, you might see a AA or an A+ type rating, and that would be commensurate with the level of risk, and you'd expect the yield to be a bit higher on those. So you did hear years back about the federal government being downgraded. I think Standard & Poor's downgraded the federal government one notch. But you know, in all intents and purposes, everything federally backed is considered AAA.
So the NR designation is
not rated. It says federal, not a rated.
Federally backed CDs. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you. Anything else before we move on? Funny.
I found that QSIP lookup for Sherry. Fidelity Investments has a QSIP lookup tool on their website for free. And then there's a QSIP Global Services as well.
Thank you.
Vanguard.
Funny.
Questions. One, if you're earning interest, do you keep reinvesting it or does it go back into as income on the accounts?
Some of the accounts are automatically reinvested, like class. Those monies get reinvested every month. So the district's always compounding the interest on that money. On all of the rest that matures, those are going to be decisions that the district and our company helps work with over the years to make sure that we have, do you need money for projects? Do you need the money for anything else? Or are you going to reinvest it? So those decisions will be made as each investment matures.
All right, looks like one more.
David, when you say federally backed and federally this and that, that means Federal Reserve and not federal government, right?
Well, it's actually both, sort of. So the federal treasury obviously has their interest rate setting role, but the federal government, it's their debt. So the debt of the federal government, just like your agency issuing debt for operations, it's their obligation in their budget to pay for that debt. So it's not the federal treasury's job to pay the debt, but they are obviously a board that's independent of the federal government that's there to regulate interest rates and to keep markets liquid. So they do have two different roles. I'm not an expert in everything federal, but when we talk about federally backed, we're talking about the federal government, not necessarily the federal treasury.
All right, why don't we move on? We got quite a bit of agenda left to do. So how about one more, Bonnie, and then we'll
move on. Second half of my question, are we still paying $1,000 a month for the consultant, or is the rate gone up? And what commission do we pay?
No commission.
For each action.
No commission. $1,000 a month is a $12,000 per year contract we have with their company.
In the initial presentation by Mr. Saunders, there was like a 10 or 12%.
No, not correct. So
the fee is a little bit lower than the $1,000 a month. It's 0.12%. There's no commission. It's a flat rate. And so based upon the portfolio size right now, it'd be a little under $12,000 a year.
There's no commission. They do not make any commission on any of the investments we make. They cannot legally do that.
So how does he make money?
Who? He charges $1,000. He charges us $1,000 a month. He has multiple customers. We're not his only customer. So, but he just can't make commission on public investments.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to make a point of clarification.
Yes, sir.
It's the U.S. Treasury, not the federal treasury. And it's the Federal Reserve, which is not federal at all, no more than Federal Express.
Yeah.
So we could go into detail with that, but it's U.S. Treasury, Federal Reserve, not a government agency. It's a, like he said, it's not associated with the government.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's move on to 5D financial reports as of July 25th. It's going to be Jessica or?
So just to make a note, we're trying this new, you get the information before the board. So this is all fresh, has not been looked at by the board. So anything you see and you have questions on, we can clean up before the board, has it. So if there's any questions from the public or from the committee, obviously we want to have you being a value committee here and getting fresh eyes on this and then giving it to the board, as opposed to getting something that's already been seen by the board and then you guys looking at it for the second time.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's a very important thing, because the board, part of the reason they formed us in the first place is to rely on our recommendation. So very important priority, and thank you for straightening out that schedule for us. So let me turn it over to you to walk us through it. One of the two of you.
So
I
There were two budget reports, one for fiscal year 23 and then one for July. Mm-hmm. So I'm not seeing my July in there. So I just want to preface this budget report that it's not final. We have a 60-day accrue back. So like the perfect example is right now I'm cleaning up some of our journal entry templates for entering payroll into Tyler. The payroll is done through ADP. So we get an ADP report of every single department and fund and account that payroll was assigned to, including taxes and everything else, and the health, all of that. And we had a template that still included the 5,500 department for customer service, which is now all 5,600. So I am moving that back to 5,600. So there's just some glitchy things that we're catching as we go, which have no effect on anything as long as we catch them. But all of the water sales from May, June that are trickling in every single day, those are getting accrued back. So these, I'm going to keep running fiscal year end 23 because it will increase. Our revenues will increase. We shouldn't have any more expenses, but all of the revenue will start to increase as we get that water billing back in. And the way that the Tyler Encode system works is that when we make those, when people pay their bills, the payments are associated with the billing cycle. So when it pays off those billing cycles, it automatically accrues it back to fiscal year 23 if it was charged in 23. So someone can make a $500 payment, $250 for their July 1st bill, which was fiscal year 23, and $250 for their September 1st bill, like if they're late, and it will know to split that up. So we'll still be sending these out as well as what's up to date with July.
You try to end the fiscal year on August 31st, September 1st. What's your actual close the books on a fiscal year date?
I think it's September 30th. We have until September 30th, okay. Until September 30th, but we try to close it before that.
Yeah, October is usually when you have a hard close. And that's usually when they are doing the audit. When this audit has taken a long time, mm-hmm. But usually you can have a hard close by October 1st. So
this audit's for the previous fiscal year.
Yeah, we haven't even started.
Yeah,
we will start the next one generally right after September 30th. It's when the next one gets started. And so they're going to go right back into the next one after this one.
Anything you want to highlight within the new or the closing fiscal year, realizing that our report for 7/31/23 and well, both reports really have trickling expenditures and some revenue still coming into them?
Nothing from this end. Just be aware that there's quite a bit of mosquito fire charges that are in there, and we're still going to be having some other mosquito fire charges. And ultimately, some of that, if it gets reimbursed to us either through FEMA or through litigation, that is something to be aware of in the final expense report.
Any comments from committee members? Any comments from the public? Seeing none, we'll keep our eye out for the one next month and see how the budget plane lands for the year when all everything's come in. But it's looking pretty good. I know it doesn't look like anything very far outstanding. So. So now we'll move on to action items. Number 6A, recognition of Steve Miller for distinguished committee chair service. And I will I'll kind of chime in on this one to begin with. I don't know if I was the only one to suggest it, but I was one to suggest that Steve has passed a pretty good milestone by being on the committee as chair for on and off as it's been formed for the last 4 years. And I thought that was a very admirable milestone. I do want to make sure that everyone knows that this idea is not intended to be a lifetime service award on your way out. You are still very much a part of this committee with a big job to do. but you're kind of, you know, you pass the gavel to a youngster to get some experience. And I just thought it was a very opportune time to say that you are appreciated for what you've done, that you hang in there through good times and bad times. And we would like to say thank you for that. And we admire you for what you've done.
So you're referring to a younger person? Is that
I'll take whatever opportunities I can get his chair to articulate things the way I want. So
check on that.
So just a couple things. Mr. Miller has served on the committee since April 8th of 2021. It says resigned. He was, I think, forcibly removed from his committee chair. Let's say that as of June 29th. But I think he's very appreciative of the forced removal.
Well, and not anything to do with his service personally, because the entire committee was removed.
Yes,
right?
And I know Mr. Miller has done a great job, and I will give him the kudos of me coming in, and he was very welcoming to me in this position, and I took the things that I knew that this committee was passionate about very seriously. And the last presentation we received on investments was as a result of, you know, Mr. Miller and Director McDonald having the foresight to do a better job of investing our funds. And so I will give Mr. Miller a ton of credit for that. You know, that number that you see in those investment pools is going to be as a result of their service to this district. So, you know, he serves at the pleasure of the board, but he also serves for free. And so that is something that not a lot of people realize, that this is a thankless committee position, that there is no benefit for him except for having a strong divide community. So, Mr. Miller, we do have a little token of our appreciation for you. And I'd like to invite Mr. President McDonald up and Mr. Miller to present to you a gavel. Your own gavel you can take home, and you can gavel your wife around.
No, it's putting it right here next to
you. No, this is
where that one's yours. We've got one here.
So dual.
So you can take this one home, and then you can.
Can I get a picture of the three of you?
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Nice.
Well done.
Good day. And I would just like to wrap it up by reading the proclamation itself.
Thank you, Steve. I because I was looking at my agenda and I saw my name was in there.
You almost didn't show up.
I better have something to say. So I thought about it and I actually wrote it down because there's a lot to it that I'd like to share it. And foremost, it is I who thank you. It's been an interesting 4 years. The previous board did not quite know how to deal with a finance committee that was proactive. And a previous general manager did not want the finance committee meddling in financial affairs. I'm sure when the committee member, Chairman McDonald, remembers our unsolicited recommendation to the previous board that we might want to invest some of the $9 million we had sitting earning virtually nothing. Even short, medium term CDs were paying over 4% interest and were a no risk investment. But we were expected to act as a financial fire extinguisher. Stay in the box on the wall. Don't call us. We'll call you. Then they attempted to banish myself and one other committee member because we kept getting out of the box. But by the good customers for GDPUD raising a ruckus, they backed down. Eventually, the then board just abolished the finance committee altogether. With the coming of the new, more enlightened board, the finance committee was reestablished and a new charter was drawn up. With the new board and new GM staff, it has been open and my pleasure to serve. We see monthly rather than quarterly budget results. We have an investment plan. We are looking at ways to strengthen GDPUD facilities, enhance GDPU services, and finding opportunities to try to hold the line on the increasing costs. My role and effort were a small bit in the ongoing process. The real thanks belongs to the current board, the current general manager, and the current staff. Da, 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 da. for just for the work and support of the finance committee would still be in that, we'd still be in that box if that hadn't happened, if we hadn't gotten new board, good staff, and, you know, a great general manager. So, you know, it's kind of nice that we're not just hanging on the wall waiting for somebody to call and say, hey, could you do this for us? You know, we took a proactive example with the Mitch and I, when we both looked at each other and said, why aren't we investing any of this? I mean, you know, not going out on a limb and investing something crazy, but a CD is a CD. You invest it, you wait, you end the CD period, you get your interest, and you walk away or you reinvest it. And they were just sitting on $9 million. So it is the general manager, it is the staff, it's the public, and it certainly is the willingness of the finance committee to start looking at things that we can do to make it better rather than just, you know, sitting there waiting for the staff or the board to call us and say, hey, we'd like for this to be done. So I thank you. I mean, it's been a pleasure to serve with the new group. It was a pretty rocky road with the old one. So thank you very much. This is very nice. Mm-hmm. And probably more than I deserve, because I really enjoyed working here. And I enjoy all the new folks that are on the committee also. Mm-hmm. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Well deserved.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. Bonnie, I think you got the draw.
Hopefully Steve's been working for the public, challenging the manager, the board, whatever, since way back to 2008. I was elected to the board from 2008 to 12. He and a whole bunch of people would come to the public forum. And it was almost like an organic thing that didn't have any control. But Steve was one of those that was always holding the general manager to be specific. If you're going to do something with Walton, what was the pipe? What was this? Whatever. And he was always polite, but he has a very loud voice. And he can make himself known when he wants to be. But he never was rude. He was never like out of line, and he was one of the people that appreciated the district, appreciated the staff and the general manager, who wanted to hold you accountable. So he's been in this kind of organic financial community for a very long time.
Thank you.
I just want to state that previous board that Steve mentioned that disbanded the finance committee a few years ago, most of those members were on the finance committee, and it was fine for them then to be on the committee. They were all for it and everything. But once they got on the board, they didn't want any new blood. They didn't want any new ideas. And it's great that you guys have stepped up and done the job. You did a great job. Right. Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah, very diplomatic and persistent. The way you. Oh, yeah, and you've also known for bringing forth a solution instead of just the problem. You know, if you want to make a difference, you volunteer and you participate in community involvement like you do. Not everybody does that. They just complain. So you're a doer. So thank you again.
All right. Let's take up item 6B. Let's review the audit.
So I'm going to apologize to the committee. I was hoping to have a much more solid report for you as of today, but I wanted to have something here for you to look at as an audit. Now, this is still considered a very draft audit. There are still some pieces that are missing. There are pieces that we are still working on with our a CPA firm who is helping us develop what is called an MDA, or a management decision and analysis. And that is kind of a look at this, but then a future look at the next year and how things may have changed from one fiscal year to the next fiscal year. It also includes some of the projects that were completed along the way. So this does not include any of the CIP projects that were completed with what we spent, but not necessarily what actual projects were completed and what the names of those projects are. So that's all stuff that we're still developing. I do have a little note from our CPA firm. The audit draft is in its very preliminary stage. I have reviewed it, and it looks like there are minimal changes, mostly formatting. It should be finalized very soon. In its current state, the auditors have not proposed any major changes to the numbers, so what you see in the draft matches to the final, to your trial balance in the financial system. So basically what they're saying is that the audit is coming back very clean as of right now. There is going to be some formatting changes, i.e. that we're going to add some documents. There's going to be a few more things, but this is really the numbers that are going to be submitted to the board at the next board meeting. We are hoping to have this like finalized tomorrow or Monday, and that's how close we are in a draft form to this being finalized. I really wanted to include the board, the committee on this, and have you have the first set of eyes on it. I would just like to maybe turn it over to Jessica, because she's been working really closely with Lewis on this. And if she has anything to add that I missed, please, Jessica, go ahead and jump in.
No, that's pretty much it. The MDA needs to get completed. Lewis is helping me with that. And because I was only here for part of that fiscal year, not familiar with the projects that were completed before I got here. So I'm working with Adam Brown as well to get a complete list of impacts to the district financially during that time, so we can put those in there. If you look at cash in, it had page numbers. I don't know. It's when I printed this page, so I could PDF the one page and send it to them saying this needs to be fixed, page numbers didn't print. So it's something within the document they gave us. But it's cash and investments note 2 on the continuation page. Like, you can see that the columns weren't expanded when they pasted it in, so you can't see the numbers. It's just pound signs. So there's just little formatting issues, like Lewis said. The numbers do match the trial balances. And they didn't leave dates in the back because it's not done. And they'll enter all those dates when they've given their final product. And then it looks like some payroll questions, which I sent over. So we'll get, I've had the highlighted most of the stuff that needs to be updated or entered. And so we're just, they were a little reluctant to let us show you because that, you know, they didn't want to be embarrassed by it, but it's a work in progress. It's almost done.
And I will just add one more thing, that this is important to have, because some of the grant monies that we're having come in will require an audit. Right. And at that, a clean audit, you can't have, you know, something that is very far out of whack. So this is a testament to, I would say, Jessica and her staff for making sure that the auditors had everything that they needed to bring this back. And then she has been doing a killer job with ensuring the budget and the financials are all clean when they get put in, and if not, then changed readily and documented clearly.
So where would, when the final comes in, and you said probably a couple of days, mm-hmm. where will that be available?
So that will be posted on our website. Okay. We have to legally post the audits to our website. They are a legal document.
And then, of course, if we get it in time, it'll be part of the board packet.
I am pushing really, really hard. I was pushing the CPAs today to help finalize some of the stuff, and really hoping to get this done before the board meeting on the 8th. Yeah, I couldn't remember, it was 8th or the 9th, sorry. So I wish that we had more for you as a committee, but I would love for you to take this. And if you do have any questions, or you notice anything, I know, Mr. Gorenz, you have a little bit of a history with some of these. So we would love to have any comments, and you can email me, you can email Jessica, you can, however you feel that you want to get any comments into you. I feel really bad that this literally got to you guys this morning. So I don't want the public to think that the committee is not asking questions because they don't like know what's going on. They have not had enough time to have their eyes on it.
Any other comments from the committee members?
I have one, because it's a perfect example of what I was talking about a minute ago. This is the first time that the finance committee got to see it first, which is kind of what our role is to take a look at it, review it, ask the questions if we do it in our off hours, come to a meeting, talk about it, and then go to the board and say, you know, we've looked at it, here's what we found, here's what we're doing. In the past, it was, if we even got to see it, it was because somebody slipped it to us under the table. I mean, you know, you guys are so good that you just have no concept of what it used to be like. Bonnie knows, Steve knows, and I knew. And, you know, it was the reason that I finally just rolled over and said, yeah, okay, I'll serve on the committee, hoping to change it. And so we sat there and became proactive about things that we could do. And the board was just aghast that we would do that. So I guess I just needed to point out to you, the public, and everybody else that that is the difference, that you folks and all the guys and ladies that have served on the committee have brought to the table, and it's so good. So I won't say any more about that.
Turn to the public. Any public comments on three?
Yes, I have a question on note number 15. It's on page 39 of the PDF. And it's post-employment benefits other than pensions. Is that the unfunded CalPERS liability?
Hold on, let us try to find where you're at because we don't have page numbers. I apologize.
I think that's retiring medical.
Note 15. It's about 40%.
I believe that's retiring medical, the $435 per month toward retirees.
That is correct.
No, that's the 435.
It's
because it has $1.4 million liability.
That would be correct.
So that is the employee medical?
That is correct.
Okay, where is the unfunded CalPERS liability in this audit? Do you know where that's at?
Should be the one right before that. I'm sorry, two before that. I apologize. Note 13, it looks like.
Yes.
And that's the only thing that it describes? It doesn't describe how much is paid every year or anything like that?
We don't know what's paid every year. That's a we're told by CalPERS how much we're paid every year. They basically send us a nasty gram around June and say by July 1st by July 30th you need to pay us this much.
Okay, so it's saying, so on note 13 it's saying we owe $6.5 million.
Yes, and so part of that, and I will tell you, I just got an email from them. Part of that is they are assuming that they will receive up to 6.8% in return on their investment. They got about 5.8 in the last email that I received. And so basically what they're saying here is at the different percentage rates, what our liability is. So if we were to get more, if they were to get a higher rate, like 8.15, then we would owe less. And so that is what this is trying to say.
Okay. So at one point in time, they brought in some financial expert that was trying to do something with bonds or something to pay it off. So we're not paying that $500,000 a year. Is there anybody looking into that?
You're probably referring to CalTrust. And unfortunately, the money that we have as an unfunded liability has to go to CalPERS first. We can develop a specific fund that would pay for these, but it would take funds out of the other investments we have. So we can use the investments that we have currently to fund this liability every year.
Okay. Now I'm talking more about getting a bond or something to pay it off, not take it out of our coffers.
So
have a
state bond or the district bond? The district have a bond.
Well, there was an investment guy that came about 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know if Mitch remembers it or what, but they were thinking about being able to totally pay off CalPERS, and then we pay this bond back over years, less money.
I don't believe that anybody from CalPERS, I don't believe there's going to be any bond, any, the people of the state are not going to have any appetite for a bond of the nature that would need to pay off CalPERS. You're looking at hundreds of billions.
Yeah.
Right. And typically, typically a pension fund will not allow that because these liabilities vary from year to year to year. They typically get worse. So they're not going to let you fix your liability at one time and say you're all caught up. It's going to continue in all likelihood to grow.
Yes.
Don't mean to be a negative, but that's probably what's going to happen.
And ultimately, the newer employees that are hired, and I'll just give myself as an example, I am what is called a PEPRA employee. So there are three different tiers of PERS. There is a classic member, and their pensions are guaranteed at 55 up to 3%. A lot of them are 2.7%. And so they're very high pension percentages for low retirement years. That ended in 2012. In 2012, there was a different pension plan, and it's not much different, but it brings it down to 2.5%. And so that is called tier two instead of classic. So tier two is still 55%. It's a little bit less in percentage. And then anybody hired after January 1st, 2013, which is approximately 85% of the employees here. I might be a little high on that percentage, so please don't quote me on that. Is what is called a PEPRA, or Pension Reform, PERS Pension Reform Act is what it stands for. That's what the PEPRA stands for. So basically anybody after that, they move the retirement age from 55 to 62, and the max you can get before 62 is 2%. Now, if you work past age 62, you can get a little bit more percentage, up to 2.5%, but you have to work until 67. So these numbers, as people retire and then the inevitable happens, these numbers could potentially go down as in future employees contribute more to their pension plan. So we as PEPRA employees are required to participate in a greater number than the classic and the tier two members.
Okay, I wasn't asking about current employees. It was the unfunded CalPERS liability for the past employees.
I'm trying to say, as things go further and some of these retirees start to fall off of the classic plan, more is being paid. So the unfunded liability in the future, I'm not saying like next year or the year after, will start to go down because we are contributing more to that liability as opposed to the classic members.
Okay. Well, I'll look up that presentation and comment it on it once I find out what it was about. All right. Thank you.
Some of the numbers here on this note 15 page are highlighted. Does that mean they're still?
If it's yellow,
information.
Yeah, it is not final.
Okay. Yeah. So those are the areas that our CPA and Jessica are still working to fill it. And so that's why there's some highlighted areas.
Okay. This is an action item. I'd like to see what your thoughts are. I'm a little bit uncomfortable taking a formal action on this in its unfinished state. So it may be that we can acknowledge its
existence,
its draft form. And that I would continue to follow it and take a look.
I would not ask some sort of a recommendation to push this to the board. I would ask that you allow us to send you the final, and then you are able to comment, and we are able to incorporate any of your potential comments once it's finalized at the board meeting. And so a little bit more of an informal process. And again, I apologize. We worked incredibly hard. I'll give Jessica tons of credit. And Liz, we tried so hard to get this to this committee so that it had an actual, a little bit more solidness to it. And it came down to the wire. I wanted something, and I needed you guys to at least see that this is here.
Yeah, and I would really appreciate that. And I think, does that sound reasonable to you? We won't take a formal action on it. We'll continue as individuals to follow it and make any comments. Is this, so you said you're going to roll right into the next audit. So Is that with the intent that next year's version would be able to come out earlier, maybe see it in
January,
May, June, January?
I think it's going to be January or February. We should be able to get
good. Good. I mean, that's all we can ask. You're responding to what you're handed when you got here and making changes and improvements, moving the schedule up for us. We appreciate that.
Right? I would say a lot of the issue with this one being late was the contract got signed late. And it's a new firm, and so it's a new fresh eyes on the numbers. So hopefully, as they are going to be our firm for almost four years, if we decide to continue with them for the fourth year, they should be able to plug and play some of the accounts that we and understand some of the accounts and have less questions as to, you know, what is this account for? Because I think that's what a lot of the delay was. It's like, how is this account relating to this account, and how are these transactions all related together? So a little familiarity should allow this audit to go smoother next year.
Brings us to item 6C, review of district operating reserve policy.
Thank you. This is something that we look at every year. And again, this may be a little premature as well, but
it was supposed to be done in April.
Well, my premature is usually that comes with the audit. And so this usually comes with a recommendation from the audit. The board at the district originally before COVID happened had a 120-day reserve policy. When COVID happened, 120 days became a little bit more difficult because there was a executive order and a moratorium on water bill payments. So folks who were not able to pay their water bills due to not being able to work were not able to be shut off. So the district had to increase the amount of operating reserve that was available to the district just in the case that some of those water payments couldn't be made. Well, that has all been rescinded and it's all back to where it was pre-COVID. So we as a staff are recommending the district also go back to the pre-COVID state of 120 days of reserve fund. And so there are three options that are underneath the recommended action on the staff report. You are welcome to recommend one of those three options to the board at the next board meeting. And like, as I said, staff's recommendation is 120 days. And you can see some of the numbers that are available there. I don't want to read all those numbers, but you can see those. 150 days is also an option, and then keeping it current at 180 days is also an option. So I'll open it up to the committee for any questions. Jessica is also involved in this. She put the staff report together, so if you have any questions, she also will be available to answer.
Yeah, so if you notice, if we stayed 100 for this fiscal year, so this is dependent on what was budgeted for this last fiscal year, 22-23. So we take our operating budget that was approved by the board for fiscal year 22-23, and we determine what our monthly operating costs are. So we get an idea what was approved by the board as our operating budget. We take 180 days, which is 6 months, and 150, which is 520, which is four. So those are the numbers that are down here at the bottom. And now that we got the fiscal 22 audit back, even though it's preliminary, they've assured me that the numbers shouldn't be changing because it matches with our, you know, with our balance sheet from last
Trial
year.
Balance.
Child balance. Yes, sorry. That was not coming out. So I took our cash balance, and that's what determines what our surplus is. So if we were to take the approved budgeted 180 days operating revenue and subtract the cash balance, it gives us the surplus that we transfer into the CIP. Well, because the cash balance was so low, because no one was paying their bills and there was no recourse because of COVID, that was the whole COVID fallout, it's a negative amount. So we're at a deficit of $57,800 if we were to keep that formula. So there's no money for the CIP projects to cover the CIP projects for the last fiscal year or for this fiscal year. So if you go back to 120 days, it's $716,000. But the one thing you have to keep in mind is if they really dig in and want to keep it at 180 day reserve, we have liquidity. So right now we have I just have to make one more transfer, $1.5 million in the California class. So that is the 120 day operating reserve. As you were very thoroughly explained to by David, we have access to that funds. So this is an emergency reserve. This is if we have another major disaster, if we have another pandemic, anything like that, we have 180 day operating reserve to cover our expenses. So we don't have to take loans out or anything like that. The state would definitely lend us emergency money like they did this year for the mosquito fire, and we would just be paying those bonds off. But we did express that a lot of that money that is invested is liquid. It's available to pull out if there's an emergency. So the really 24-hour liquid cash, my recommendation is that we just stay with what we have right now, which is the $1.5 million, which is 120 days reserve. We could pull it out same day. If the building burnt down and we needed to rent something, a new facility, buy all new computers, all new vehicles, because everything burnt up and we didn't save anything. That's all the only reason why we would need to have that much money liquid. Because if it's just like the mosquito fire, we're still pulling in revenues. We still have other revenue streams to cover the day to day. And we have savings, $101.5 million that's in that California class.
Plus there's also almost $500,000 of additional funding that is in the savings you have a paycheck. We get a paycheck and it comes in the term of, you know, bills that come that get paid. And so that's about $300,000 to $400,000 every month.
About $400,000 to $600,000
every
it's
month.
It's more in the summer.
So that's going to keep that savings account, you know, buffered. So the goal is to not have to move money out of that investment account. And that would be our, you know, reserve account. Now, just to add on, Jessica explained that perfectly. If you looked at that investment report, you'll notice that some of those are shorter term, 6 to 9 month investments, less than six, and then up to nine. Those are also considered fairly liquid. They're not liquid, but in the case of an emergency, you know, we can access those funds as we may need them. So we see, you know, we had a pretty drastic fall and winter this year on the divide. We had a fire and we had the wettest, most snow that we've had in the history of California, not in just like the divide, but we had a lot of extra expenses that we were able to absorb. And we, you know, we had that funding that was there. So we were able to absorb that. And, you know, there is additional stuff that we get as an IE. Property taxes come in January and May. And so those are the bolsters those come in as almost $1 million. And so those are the bolsters that keep getting us through this operating period. And so last year, kind of to compound, we had the fire, we had the rain, the snow, we had all that, and we didn't even get our property taxes, but we were still able to have the money available and in the system. We didn't have to have any drastic, oh my goodness, we got to go to LAIF and get money out. We didn't have to do any of that because we had this operating reserve. So what we're saying is, you know, we don't need to have the amount because we have these other liquid availabilities of cash. Turn it over to the chairman.
President.
When that happened that the county didn't pay us as on time, how much would that have affected the 120 day reserve?
We got
down to about 650,000.
And that was all analyzed by David and his team. And so they saw the kind of this is kind of how our finances go. It is very much like a roller coaster. And he analyzed the amount and the need for liquid cash, and he determined that basically we don't ever get below about $600,000, and you know that's when the next check, that's when the next payment hits from the county. And like I said, we were able to weather. We got low, but we definitely had enough in the account to still pay the bills.
That's for the 180 days.
Correct.
No, it never got over. I mean, if you're looking at these numbers, which are the 22-23 operating reserve numbers.
Mm-hmm. In other words, what would have happened if there was 800,000 less?
We would have had to pull from LAIF.
Okay. That's what I wanted.
But we
or in this, well, we have class. That's so not LAIF.
We would have had to pull from LAIF.
But all we would have had to do was transfer money into the savings account to have it as a operating reserve. So it was still there as very liquid. And LAIF is pretty liquid.
So it would have been a 200,000 2 or 3 week event and paid back.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The other. This Fund 111 is strictly for CIP. Is it allocated strictly for CIP?
So all of our surplus every year, which is dependent on the reserve. So we keep reserve, and then there's a surplus of cash on hand, and that gets transferred into the CIP for capital improvement projects.
Can't use those funds to bring them back.
They can make you money.
What were you? What was your comment?
Bring the funds back out of 111. Once they're in 111.
Oh no, you can. No, that's not.
I mean,
we can always make a fund transfer.
Yeah, I guess.
Typically, that's how the district's policy has been, is to take and fund the CIP. For example, if 1 year we're like, man, we are just kicking butt and we don't have any need for any capital projects, then we could do something else with it. But, you know, as a district, we're really not allowed to like make money. And so any of the surplus money that we make during the year, we have to allocate it somewhere.
Yeah.
And so we allocate it to the CIP projects and the infrastructure improvements.
Just so I understand, and this is an action item, so you're asking us
to make a recommendation,
and your recommendation is that we lower the operating reserves from 1.8 to 1.2. Post-COVID, is that?
Well, no, from 180 days to 120 days, and it would reduce it from 2.3 to 1.5.
I'm mixing up my units.
Yeah.
From 180 days to 150 days.
Thank you. 220.
120.
Should I just hand the gavel back?
You're doing a great job.
Okay. From 180 days of operating reserve to 120 post-COVID. And I think what I'm hearing you say is that's not our only safety net.
Yeah. That is not.
It is
even at 120,
because we have other options.
If you go below the 120 day reserve, you're not laying off staff.
Nope.
You do have other investments you can dig into. You potentially forfeit some administrative fees or something like that, I expect. But it's the first in a series of safety nets for the.
That is correct.
Okay. From 180 days to 120 days.
There we go.
All right.
I'd like to make a motion that we make the recommendation to the board that we put this at 120 days.
Did we hear from anybody from the public?
I think President McDonald, excuse me, had a question. I apologize for not giving you your due there.
No, I was just wondering, and I should know this, but where is the reserve money in Fund 111? Is that?
That's capital improvement. That's all that means is a CIP.
Yeah, is it accumulating? Accrued interest?
Yes.
Like five?
It basically sits in like the class or something else. Like
as long as it's not dead money.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to hold that motion? I do see public.
The only dead money we have is in checking to pay.
400,000?
450,000.
Okay. Good.
We have a comment from Cherie.
Turn it over to public comment. Cherie, you have your hand up?
Yes. Does it, if you go down to the 120, does it that affect the 6 month capital liquidity for the investments?
No.
You still have that?
Yes.
Yeah, because those are liquid too.
And we all did the 6 months of capital liquidity is part of the treasuries and the CDs that we have. Some of those are liquid in that 6 month period. And so that's where you can still meet the goal that or the state requirement.
Okay, thank you.
Any other public comment? So we entertain a motion.
It's out there on hold.
Okay, so the motion was recommend to the
board that we move it to the 120 days versus 180.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hearing none opposed? That recommendation passes. Moving on to action item 6D, approve the rescheduling of regular August Finance Committee meeting to a special meeting on August 23rd.
So this one should be easy. I hope that you're all available. August 31st, I'm sorry, it's hot in here. I know we're almost done though. I told her not to turn the AC on.
Oh, by design.
Yeah.
Right. At 4:30, crank it up to 85.
Yeah. On August 31st, there is a CSDA conference in Monterey that I will be attending, as well as potentially one or two of the board members. And so one of the liaisons to the committee is potentially going to be attending that. So my recommendation is to move it forward 1 week, same time, same place, just moving it forward to August 24th, if the committee is in acceptance of that.
For some reason, I had the 24th already.
Yeah, I did too.
So
there's five Thursdays in the month.
It's not the fourth Thursday. It's the last Thursday is what the resolution
is. That's like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, totally. And so I had the same problem.
This week or something like that. So
I had prepared for a whole finance committee meeting and nobody showed up one time. And so, So it is the last Thursday. So this one we're moving to a one Thursday prior. There will be a need a motion, I believe.
We need a motion. Okay. I'll move to change the date to the 24th, Steve.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 24th it is.
Change my calendar.
It's already there.
It's set.
Any comments from, so this brings us to item 7, Finance Committee Member Committee Comments and Reports.
If I can interject really quickly, if you don't mind, the pleasure, if the chairman has the pleasure.
Just this once.
I just got confirmation that it's not 95%. It is 100% confirmed that we do have a letter from the Cal Fire people. Whoa. So that grant is officially ours.
All right. Wow. Outstanding.
Good work.
So while we're working, I am still working and getting emails.
Time to celebrate.
Good work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, well, turn it back over to you.
Well done.
Any comments, reports?
No.
So it was said earlier that none of us receive any benefit, stipend or otherwise, on this committee. And I think, as Steve was saying earlier, we're in the middle of a pretty good time. I think things are functional. I am very pleased to see staff. You know, when I came on the finance committee, the organization I work for in my day job is a fairly similar size department with a similar size budget. And so, some of the comments I was very curious about during a couple of election cycles ago about potential mismanagement, things like that. And I looked at it and I said, I don't see gross mismanagement for sure, because I know what it costs to run a department like this. And I don't see extravagant expenditures. But I did, when I came on the committee, see. And I've seen in years past, living on the divide for 25 years, a reluctance of staff to entertain new ideas, to be open. And I have seen that break open. I've seen all of you guys be willing to have the dialogue, to have this committee, to entertain new ideas, to be open. And that really is what, you know, our function is, I think, is this is a good day, but someday it won't be. Someday we'll have to either raise rates. Someday we'll have to cut things. Some days are going to have to be hard decisions. And this board has suffered during those days. And I think if we can do anything well, it is to be open and build confidence in the divide, that when the bad day comes, you can look at this committee. And I want to say to Cherie, to Bonnie, to Stephen, to the folks who come here regularly, but when that day comes when hard decisions have to be made, you can say, look, there is somebody on your side who has looked over the finances. And if we have to make a recommendation for hard decisions, we're not benefiting from it. We don't make a penny being here. And if there's a rate increase, we all pay it. So we've got nothing in the game other than making this district function as efficiently with the greatest value and giving the public confidence in their district. That's our whole mission. That's why we're here. And I praise staff for their part in that. I'm seeing the openness of staff is great. Seeing this committee here is great. We do have a new email account if somebody wants to reach out to just the finance committee. You want to get things to us that we can look at during the month. That's gdpudfinancecommittee@gmail.com. Is that ready for prime time?
Because it is.
So I had talked to our general manager, talked to Nick a couple of weeks ago and said, I think, you know, given the importance of being able to receive comments, I think we get them one way or another. I think some folks have my email and I've gotten some emails and stuff. And I'll ask that this be included in the next agenda. We'll raise this as just how to communicate with the finance committee as an issue for the next meeting. But that's important. You need to be able to reach out to us. We need to be able to hear. I believe Brown Act may prohibit us from responding to all the other committees. You can contact us. Brown Act, I think, may preclude us from responding to all the committee members outside of this public forum. We'll talk through how that works.
Yeah, we can forward the emails through the committee, but we would have to do it as a blind copy.
Yeah. So just wanted to interject that, restate our purpose in my mind and the importance of that communication door open to the public.
Just wanted to make note, Sheree did raise her hand. Sheree, are you looking for the email a little slower?
Yes, is it FC or Finance Committee?
It is spelled out as Finance Committee. So gdpudfinancecommittee@gmail.com.
At Gmail?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, not org. All right, thank you.
That one is. So we'll have access to it, make sure that the access to all the committee members gets there. Anybody can email to it. So we'll take a look at your thoughts. You'll know that we're seeing your thoughts before we get here. So we'll be more prepared to address them. And the staff will be able to make sure that we see them and get anything to us. So thank you.
I think we're ready to adjourn. If you guys are ready.
Andy, was that off the cuff or were you reading on a teleprompter? Mm-hmm. That was really good.
From the heart, that's really what we're here for.
Yeah,
that's what we think about. So with that, do I hear any other, just real quick, item 8, any other agenda items any of you want to see on the next meeting? Hearing none, motion, anybody want a motion adjournment?
I'll make a motion to adjourn. Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
All right.
First meeting, I kept under 2 hours.
That was excellent. You did a great job.
Yeah, it gives me gall to say so.